And now the game where we reward a lifetime of achievement with a few moments of confusion. It's the game we call Not My Job. Novelist Clyde Edgerton was born in North Carolina and except for 5 years has lived here his whole life. Now those 5 years he spent in the employ of the United States government flying jets in Vietnam and elsewhere. His most recent book, a memoir, is called Solo. It's a celebration of the joy of flying, and even on a few occasions, the joy of dropping straight toward the ground. Clyde Edgerton, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Peter. It's nice to be here.
Nice to have you. Thank you. Now, you say in your book that you first became interested in flying when your mother took you to see some airplanes right here in Raleigh.
That happened when I was about 4 years old. She was the kind of type to get me out of the house and show me things. And so she took me to the airport, which was just one little runway at the time. And a couple of years later, she took me to see the electric chair, actually, in Raleigh. And it wasn't a science trip. It was a trip about morals and so forth. And so that doesn't have a lot to do with airplanes, but...
Well, it's just you came that close to growing up to be an executioner, I guess.
That's right. So.
Why in the world would she take you to see the electric... At what age?
I think I was about six. I learned that it wasn't, not that it makes any difference, but it wasn't an electric chair. It was actually a chair in the gas chamber in Central Prison in Raleigh.
And what a letdown.
Okay, I got a number of questions about that. First of all, they let six-year-olds into the prison to see the gas chamber?
Actually, I remember standing up on a little stool. There was a little window about the size of a loaf of bread that you could look through and you could see the chair. I told an interviewer about it because I used a character in a novel, and this happened to the character in the novel, and that my mother had taken me, and someone called her and said, "You didn't take him, you took the whole Sunday school class." And so then when I was on tour, I would ask people in the audience, how many people have a mother who took them to see the electric chair? I was in Portland, Oregon, and I asked the question, and four people raised their hand. One was from North Carolina, one from South Carolina, one from Georgia, and one from Mississippi. And the guy from Mississippi raised his hand. He said, "In Mississippi, we had a portable electric chair that they took around to the elementary schools." So,
in those four states, when they instituted that policy, the rate of six-year-olds murdering people went way down.
Yes.
So anyway, that didn't take, but the airplane did, and you became a pilot. You became, in fact, an Air Force pilot.
Right.
And you enjoyed yourself.
I did. I'd sort of, I looked forward to, I dreamed about flying when I was small, and then I would watch these films when TV went off at midnight with an F-104 doing aileron rolls and the poem High Flight and the National Anthem. And this was right after World War I, World War II, so it was honorable to serve your country, and so I was ready to go when I came to school here in 1962, and I was in ROTC for 4 years. And then in the Air Force for 5 years.
Wow. But you're not flying anymore.
I haven't flown since 91, when I crashed the airplane I owned at that time.
Really?
Yeah. No one was hurt. It was a sort of a simple little tip over on the nose and over on the top.
But you walked away and that was it?
That was it.
Right.
One little quick story about the crash.
Oh, sure, please.
Many people here know Tim McLaurin, who's a writer. He was a good friend of mine, and he and I flew together quite often. When I crashed my airplane, which totally airplane, the night that happened, I started calling my friends, and saying, "I crashed my airplane." And then they'd say, "Oh, gosh, you okay? Is the airplane okay? Are you all right?" Call another friend, "Are you all right?" "Yes." Another friend, "Are you okay?" "Yes." I called Tim. I said, "Tim, I crashed my airplane today." And he said, "Damn, I wish I'd been with you."
Well, Clyde Edgerton, we're happy to have you with us. We've invited you here to play a game we're calling...
Of course you can trust me. I'm a doctor.
Mm-hmm. You might think that going to the doctor now is a pain, what with the insurance and the cost of drugs. On the other hand, these days, you at least have a decent chance of not being killed. We're going to ask you three questions about medical treatments of the past, brought to our attention by a wonderful institution known as the Museum of Questionable Medical Devices. A real place in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Get two of these questions right. You'll win a prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice, under their home answering machine. You ready to play?
Ready.
Okay, here we go. Carl, who is Clyde Edgerton playing for?
Peter, he's playing for Kevin Trapani of Chapel Hill, North Carolina.
All right, sir. Here's your first question. Which of these was a medical device you could have purchased in 1918 made possible by the modern miracle of electricity? A, the intra-ear brain massager. B, the do-it-yourself home companion bone saw. Or C, the prostate gland warmer.
So, should I say what I would like to have been invented? Or?
Follow your bliss, Clyde. That's what I'm saying.
So, panel, can you help me out a little bit?
You're getting warm, I think.
Okay. I'll say C.
The prostate gland warmer. You're right. Merely plug it in and insert.
Whoa.
And if that sounded too delicate for those suffering from maladies back in that era, they could also turn to the much feared rectorotor. All right, next question. Now, you may think that this sort of thing has faded away, but no. It's continued through the years. In 1976, for example, more than 4 million people laid out about $10 to buy what? A, the foot-operated breast enlarger pump. B, the power-off pimple disc sander. Or C, the pure carbon aura cleansing brush.
Aura cleansing?
Yeah, you know, an aura being the field around you that you're supposed to exude, according to some theories of the spirit, and you, this presumably you brush to cleanse it, your aura.
What year was
this? This should be 1976.
C.
C. You're going to go for the aura.
C.
No, it was the breast enlarger pump.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Pretty much what you would expect, foot-operated pump.
What do you do with your hands while you're using it? Why would you?
Here's your last question. So now you're one for two. If you get this last one, you'll win.
Oh.
All right, so here we go. People are still making money selling this sort of thing. For example, as recently as 1996, you could buy a Crystaldyne pain reliever. What, in reality, is a Crystaldyne pain reliever? Is it A, a repackaged surplus pet rock from the 1970s? B, a gas grill igniter with a little handle on it? Or C, a plastic pyramid you wear on your head.
Jesus. I don't know what the gas grill has to do with pain. I mean, that seems, we can rule out number, letter B.
Yeah.
So we'll go with
if it's a pet, the pet rocks, if crystalline, is that a hint? Was it a clear rock?
Pet rocks weren't crystal. No,
they were
just kind of
granite.
Lumps.
Yeah. They were granite. Yeah. So. I mean, I'm tempted to go with the. I would go with the.
I had a pet rock that grew vicious, and we had to put it back in the woods.
But Clyde, the time has come. The moment of truth. You must choose.
C.
C. You're going to choose the plastic pyramid you put in your head. Yes.
Yes.
No, it was the gas grill igniter.
Oh, in the medical. In the medical.
Well, you know, it's a little thing in your gas grill. If you happen to have a gas grill, you press it. It makes a little electric spark that lights the grill. Yeah. Well, if you take one of those things and you put it up against your skin and you push the button, it will quote. Cure headaches, back pain, arthritis, stress, menstrual cramps, earaches, sinus, nosebleeds, flu, and other ailments, unquote.
Yes, because instead of saying, oh, I have a headache, you say, oh, my arm is on fire.
Right. Pretty much. It's the misdirection school of medicine. Carl, how did Clyde Edgerton do in our quiz?
Clyde needed two correct answers to win, Peter, at least two. He had just one correct answer, so.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir. And that guy you were playing for, very important man. Yeah. You're in trouble now.
Well, I've got a prostate warmer to sell him.
Clyde Edgerton is the author of many acclaimed novels and the recent memoir, Solo. He's also a professor of writing at the University of North Carolina in Wilmington. Clyde Edgerton, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.